Sorry.
I'm going to get my ass Johnson.
He don't walk away. He's walking away from it. See him turning away from it.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It's February 23rd, and I'm opening a meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee. We are going to start off today with a public hearing on Senate Bill 1547A. And Beth, can you remind us of this bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1547A would clarify that the term public utility does not include people's utility districts or electric co-ops for the purposes of regulation by the Oregon Public Utility Commission. You heard testimony on this bill last Thursday from Senator Olson. There's no fiscal or revenue impact.
Okay, excellent. And we don't have any sign-ups today for this, so I think that we will go ahead, and I know that we've talked to some of the advocates of the bill, and they were all satisfied with Senator Olson's testimony. I'm seeing a lot of head nods back there. Thank you for that. So unless there are any comments from the committee, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on the bill and open a work session on Senate Bill 1547A.
Chair Vega Peterson, I move Senate Bill 1547 to the, is it A? I just have 47.
Yes, A.
A to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules.
Representative Johnson moves Senate Bill 1547A to the floor with the due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Rules. Is there discussion? And I will just start out by saying, in an abundance of caution with the end of session, we want to make sure that the bill has a lot of time for the discussion as things are moving along here. Yep. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none. Is there any objection? Okay, with that, the motion passes, and the bill is sent to the Committee on Rules. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 1547A. Okay, and right now I'm going to open the informational session on the Portland air toxins issue. Thank you. I see a lot of people in the audience today. We have some panels here that are going to be people from agencies, neighborhood advocates, people from industry. So I'm looking forward to a really good discussion today, and I thank everybody for their attention and concern about this issue. We do have overflow room if there's anyone who needs it looks like everybody's found a seat, but if not, it's in hearing room E. Mm-hmm. So if anybody is out in the hall or needs a place, you can go into hearing room E. With that, I want to call up the first panel, Dick Peterson, Lynn Saxon, and Dr. Paul Lewis. And welcome, everyone. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted to just make a note that we have some of our colleagues who are not normally on the House Energy and Environment Committee who are joining us today, so I thank all of you for your attention and concern to the matter, too. I know that this is an issue that a lot of us have spent some time up in Portland in different community meetings and in discussions that were happening up there, so I appreciate you guys making the time to be here today on this issue. Hey, please go ahead.
Yes. Madam Chair, members of the Commission, for the record, my name is Dick Peterson. I'm Director of the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. I've been asked today to brief the committee on DQ's response and next steps to the growing and understandable concerns about elevated levels of heavy metals in Portland's air. Before discussing the current situation, I want to start with some important background about the regulation of air quality in Oregon. DEQ operates two air permitting programs to reduce emissions from point source. The Title V permit program is required by the Federal Clean Air Act for operating major sources of emissions. There are about 110 facilities in Oregon that require these Title V permits, and DEQ received delegation of that program from EPA in 1994. The Air Contaminant Discharge Permit Program applies to construction of new and modified emission sources, as well as operation of medium-sized sources that are not subject to the bigger Title V permits. This program, the ACDP program, which began in 1972, applies to more than 2,000 facilities in Oregon. DEQ implements federal regulations targeted at air toxics. In general, those regulations require facilities to meet work practice standards install control devices, and limit the overall emissions from the facility depending on its operations and the type of operation that it is. However, these regulations do not limit overall emissions based on impact or risk to those nearby. DEQ recognized that Oregon needed to do additional work on air toxics to protect public health. Using stakeholder input, the EQC Environmental Quality Commission adopted the Oregon Air Toxics Program in 2003. The main goal of the program is to look comprehensively at air quality in a geographic area, considering the collective emissions from all industrial and non-industrial sources, so we can prioritize our efforts to reduce air toxics. In 2006, the program took a major step forward when the Environmental Quality Commission adopted ambient benchmark concentrations for 51 air toxics in Oregon. These benchmarks are set at levels protective of human health over a lifetime exposure and are based on recommendations from our Air Toxic Science Advisory Committee. These benchmarks are used to guide and prioritize our work to reduce air toxics and are non-regulatory. When we started in 2009, the Portland Air Toxic Solutions, which was the first study and planning effort by DEQ to use a geographic-based approach to address air toxics. With limited data, DEQ used a modeling approach to characterize the airshed in the Portland area. Based on this work, DEQ and its advisory committee identified five high-priority emission categories for follow-up action, along with potential emission reduction recommendations for each category. The five priority categories are residential wood combustion, cars and trucks, heavy-duty vehicles, construction equipment, and industrial metal facilities. Through this work, DEQ was aware of elevated levels of cadmium and arsenic in Portland's air, but wasn't able to pinpoint actual sources. In February of 2013, DEQ began collaborating with the U.S. Forest Service, who was testing a new, innovative air pollution detection method for an urban setting. The project analyzed samples of moss taken from Portland trees and compared them to monitored and modeled air pollution data. In DEQ's ongoing efforts to identify specific sources of cadmium and arsenic emissions, DEQ requested that the U.S. Forest Service analyze the moss samples for cadmium, arsenic, and other metals. DEQ received initial moss cadmium concentrations data from the U.S. Forest Service on May 15th of 2015, and by the next month had identified the Art Glass manufacturing facilities as potential sources of these metals as they use them in their manufacturing process. However, the data from the moss samples did not indicate actual concentrations of pollutants in the air that people were breathing. DEQ needed to sample the air itself to make that determination. DEQ selected the Southeast Portland location near Bullseye Glass because it showed the highest concentration of cadmium in moss. Starting on October 6th of 2015, DEQ conducted air sampling at Southeast 22nd Avenue in Powell Boulevard. This equipment collected 18 24-hour samples between October 6th and November 2nd of 2015. DEQ received laboratory results on January 20th of this year, January 20th, 2016, and determined that cadmium and arsenic concentrations were 50 and 150 times above DEQ's ambient benchmarks concentrations, respectively. Those are the benchmarks that I mentioned earlier. This information was of concern, of course, and DEQ immediately informed and began consulting with our partners, the Oregon Health Authority and Multnomah County Public Health, about monitoring results. On February 2nd, 2016, Oregon Health informed the Creative Children's Learning Center, which is a daycare facility in the area, and its headquarters office about the monitoring results. DEQ notified the Fred Meyer corporate office that is also nearby. On February 3rd, the next day, DEQ and OHA issued a joint news release detailing the findings of this monitoring results. At about the same time, DEQ conducted site visits to two art glass manufacturers, Bullseye and Uroboros, and requested additional information. Uroboros, a smaller facility than Bullseye, is located in North Portland, an area that also has high concentrations of cadmium and moss, but not as high as the ones near Bullseye. Shortly thereafter, Uroboros agreed at our request to stop using cadmium and chromium in their manufacturing process. They have not used arsenic for decades. Bullseye agreed to stop using cadmium, arsenic, and chromium compounds. Both facilities are still not using these compounds today. In February, DEQ deployed air sampling equipment and collected samples in southeast Portland near Bullseye Glass. DEQ will collect air samples for metals at this location at least until February 29th, then reassess monitoring needs. DEQ soil sampling around the Bullseye Glass facility was completed February 17th of 2016. Initial results of these samples are expected to be available by the week of March 7th. Air monitoring and soil sampling in North Portland around Uroboros Glass began February 19. Initial results should be available by early April. DEQ is working with both Uroboros and Bullseye to reach a written agreement on how best to control their heavy metals emissions if and when they start operating again. So we're continuing to work with them. So going forward, we have made several commitments to the governor to further explore and address these concerns, and I want to mention those now, along with the sampling that I mentioned before. DEQ will complete an inventory of facilities that use hexavalent chromium and other metals to get a better understanding of potential toxic emission sources that from emission sources. That inventory is expected to be done by February 29th of this year. DEQ is committed to investigating other hotspots identified in the U.S. Forest Service MOS study. We will prioritize the placement of monitoring resources based on our review of the complete U.S. Forest Service study and as other information becomes available. Another important factor is that we have alerted EPA about the results of this MOS study. In working with EPA on a national investigation into potential emissions from this art and architectural glass manufacturing. And we expect to get this information from EPA and their review by March 31st. This is important because we believe at DEQ that our work has shown the level of emission from this facility that should be paid attention to nationally. If there are changes, or when there are changes to our manufacturers, we think it's only fair that there be a level playing field across the country so that our good work here is used elsewhere to help set the stage and standard for other facilities that are like the ones we're looking at here. DEQ, in also recognizing this regulatory gap we have between air toxics and our regulatory control, we are in commencing rulemaking to implement what we call a health-based air quality permitting program for toxics air emissions. We'll initiate this internal rulemaking team. We'll initiate an internal rulemaking team that we're developing, putting together this week, and we'll initiate the actual rulemaking in March. And obviously, we'll have extensive stakeholder and public involvement in this rulemaking. Obviously, all this work takes resources. In at the direction of the governor and with support from the legislature, we've submitted a 2015-17 funding package to the legislative fiscal office to support increased air toxics work in Oregon. The request totals $1.5 million and asks for both monitoring and implementation resources. If approved, This policy option package would pay for additional resources through June 30th of 2017. Just a little bit of a sidebar and back to EPA is that we didn't have the monitoring equipment that was necessary to do the work that I described before, and EPA actually has loaned us some of their monitoring equipment to bring down to Oregon to use for the further work that we're doing. The package that we're proposing would provide staff and monitoring resources to address current and future hotspots of concern in Portland. In addition, it would provide staff and funding to develop and implement the statewide risk-based air permitting system that we're proposing to do with rulemaking. You have in front of you, I've had an out timeline. I'm not going to go back to it, but gives you the list of activities by DEQ over the next month and a half and expected dates when that work will be done, certainly willing to provide you any information as that information and work gets completed. Finally, I would say that we've spent a lot of time attending public meetings and talking to folks about this concern that they have, valid concern that they have. And I want to say that our counterparts here with Oregon Health Authority and Multnomah County Health have been great. I would say under Director Saxon's leadership and Multnomah County leadership that we have a really solid working relationship so that we can not only work together but communicate together and to the public and to those concerned not only about our regulatory ability and control and environmental sample data, but what that means to the public. And so I'm really pleased to be here with Director Saxon, and that concludes my comments for now.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dick. Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, thank you for the invitation to testify this morning. I'm Lynn Saxton, Director of the Oregon Health Authority. I appreciate this opportunity to outline our actions and answer any questions you may have. One of the Oregon Health Authority's most important roles is to protect public health and keep Oregonians informed about health risks in their communities. Once we learned on January 21st, 2016, that the U.S. Forest Service and the Department of Environmental Quality had detected elevated levels of cadmium and arsenic in Portland, OHA took specific and immediate action. Our actions have focused on three priorities. First, assess health risks and inform the public. Second, help residents in the affected neighborhoods obtain testing and provide evidence-based health information so they can protect themselves and their families. Third, reduce the risks of toxic exposures in Portland and other Oregon communities. Let me give you some additional details on the actions we've taken on each of these fronts. After we received information about the cadmium, arsenic, and later chromium findings, our medical experts mobilized to evaluate potential threats these metal emissions pose to the public. We shared this information with our agency partners and with the Portland community. First, we set up an incident command structure and joint information center with DEQ and Multnomah County to manage the response to these health risks and to respond to questions. The structure enables state and local agencies to work together and keep the public up to date on new developments. This incident command structure was used previously effectively this year at the UCC tragedy in Roseburg. Second, we partnered with 211 on their hotline to answer questions about air toxics from Portland residents, parents, and healthcare providers. Finally, our health experts attended community meetings and provided online updates. Our health experts are with me today. It's my privilege every day to work with these public servants. They are our chief toxicologist, Dr. David Ferrer, our state epidemiologist, Dr. Paul Cieslak, Dr. Bill Lambert from OHSU Epidemiology. Dr. Lambert is not with us today. And then Dr. Bruce Cotillius, who is the deputy state epidemiologist. These individuals spoke at community meetings in North and Southeast Portland, developed fact sheets and other information for the public, and continues to provide regular updates and other information on our website at www.state.gov/OHA. Our second focus was to help residents in the affected neighborhoods. first analyzing cancer risks. Many people who live near the two glass manufacturing facilities linked to these emissions are concerned about their risk of developing cancer and other serious diseases. To answer these questions, OHA launched a review of data from the State Cancer Registry for the areas of Southeast Portland that have been exposed. At this time, our medical researchers have found no evidence of an increase in cancers associated with cadmium and arsenic exposure. We are conducting a similar study in North Portland. We are developing plans to cover the costs of cadmium testing for current residents of the highest risk neighborhoods. So far, physician calls to the Oregon Poison Center regarding test results have not indicated an elevated risk. However, we want to ensure no one who wants to test themselves or their loved ones will be prevented from being tested because they cannot pay the cost. In addition, we are taking the additional step of notifying our Medicaid population members in these areas of the availability of testing. Next, we're using rulemaking authority to require cadmium reporting. Last week, we implemented a rule requiring that all positive urine tests for cadmium in Oregon be reported to the Oregon Health Authority. The purpose of this rule is to help us systematically gather and analyze exposure data. Local public health officials will follow up with patients based on the reports. These data will help us analyze the extent of the potential exposure and determine whether it is appropriate to expand the scope of testing. Finally, we're providing evidence-based health guidance on a daily basis to the medical community in these areas. We are providing this information to physicians and other care providers to ensure residents receive appropriate, effective testing and timely treatment. OHA is working with DEQ and will continue to work with DEQ to assess health risks of air and soil samples currently being gathered and analyzed. We will share results with the public in the coming week as we complete our analysis. In the meantime, we will notify the public if we identify any acute health risks based on preliminary data from the samples DEQ has been collected. Going forward, we want to do everything we can to minimize the risk from heavy metals in the air in Southeast and North Portland and in every Oregon community. I grew up in North Portland and I have lived in Southeast Portland for over 30 years. I understand and share the community's concern. This exposure has highlighted fundamental gaps in our federal and state laws, rules, and permitting processes. OHA looks forward to working with state legislators, our congressional delegation, DEQ, local health departments, and community members to identify appropriate solutions as soon as possible while continuing to monitor health risks and inform the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee. Thank you for having me here this morning. My name is Paul Lewis, and I serve as the Multnomah County Health Officer. As you know, our county and the City of Portland are racing to understand the sources of metal contamination in the air and determine the health risks now and any that could incur in the future. For Multnomah County, a full and trusting partnership with state and federal agencies is crucial. Our county's air quality is currently monitored by DEQ, and our link to national health experts on environmental contamination is through the Oregon Health Authority's cooperative agreement with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. As you've heard, the MOS research by the U.S. Forest Service provided valuable clues to the complicated problem of air quality in the Portland metro area. Understanding how this innovative MOS data fits into a much more complete environmental and health assessment in the face of so much fear, uncertainty, and anger is daunting. Since February 9th, Multnomah County has organized two large community meetings for over 1,000 residents. We invited neighbors to a school in Southeast Portland and to another school in North Portland to share the latest information and to listen to community concern. Each meeting lasted more than 5 hours. People had an opportunity to hear from the DEQ, OHA, federal experts, and the county, and express their fears and anger over this emerging information. The MOS, however, really only hinted at the problem. A more complete assessment of our air and soil quality will take time, likely months. We now need to look systematically at air and soil testing, to review human exposure testing that's been completed, to determine if more active prospective human monitoring of specific groups is needed. We also need to determine if we need to monitor for diseases that could already be present and to answer community questions about cancer, as you've heard. All this needs to be done, but it needs to be done well. As a pediatrician and parent raising three children in Southeast Portland near one of the hotspots, this is both personal and professional for me. I'm grateful that at least two specific sources with heavy metals have been identified and that ongoing use of materials from these sources has stopped. But I'm also aware that there are other possible hotspots that may have been identified through the Moss study, but they're not associated with known sources. People in these neighborhoods also need and deserve to know the quality of their air and soil. Going forward, Multnomah County recommends that current air quality regulations be updated to identify both routine and peak emissions of the stationary sources that exceed the health-based benchmarks that Director Peterson mentioned. And we also agree that new permit processes should require these health-based emissions strategies to prevent unnecessary human exposure. Even more important for the metro area and the state, however, is the pervasive problem of particulate matter, especially from diesel exhaust. All Multnomah County residents, not just those identified recently, live with levels of pollution from dirty diesel engines that exceed these ambient benchmark concentrations that we estimate will increase the lifetime risk of illness. This is particularly harmful for growing children and vulnerable adults. In addition to people of color and low-income citizens who disproportionately live near these sources, our health department's own 2014 report card on racial and ethnic disparities found that the census tracts in Multnomah County with more Black African American, Asian Pacific Islander, or Latino residents had 2 to 3 times higher levels of diesel particulates than tracts with mostly white residents. In the short term, these particulates cause eye, throat, and lung irritation, plus asthma. In the long run, we worry about heart and lung disease and certain cancers. We need a comprehensive statewide regulation to eliminate dirty diesel equipment, which is often cast off from our more rigorous West Coast neighbors. Finally, the state must devote adequate funding for staffing and resources to monitor air and soil quality and to provide the health analysis and public education needed to keep our community up to date. Thank you for your attention and time.
Thank you all for your testimony. Do we have questions for him? Representative Holby.
Thanks. I appreciate you paying attention to this. I'm curious if you've identified, based on what you know now, specifically about these particular industries, whether you have identified a list statewide of potentially where this could be happening in other places.
Madam Chair, Representative Holvey, as I mentioned in my testimony, we're doing that inventory as we speak. We're gathering information from potential places that might emit hexavalent chrome and chromium as a starting point and getting that list so that we have an idea. That's going to be available. We'll be done with that. I think I put in the timeline February 29. So we're gathering that information now.
And just to follow up. And so this new equipment that you're expecting to be able to get will enable you to do that testing statewide?
Madam Chair, Representative Holvey, the inventory we're doing is just a paper inventory. The equipment that we're hoping to get through the legislature will be used to prioritize areas that we might find. Looking at the Moss study, for sure, there's been identification of, as was pointed out earlier, of hotspot areas in the Portland metro area. We're going to be looking at that. But if we uncover a need somewhere else in the state that we need to mobilize quickly, we'll see about that in terms of our priorities.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Denver.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and thanks for letting me sit in. I'm going to have to leave in a moment to go help make a quorum, but hopefully I'll be able to be back. First of all, Dr. Lewis, thank you very much for your comments and your suggestions. The comments about diesel, I very much agree with, and I think we all agree that that has to be a priority for the next session, and we need to start working on that now. Dick, with respect to the rulemaking that you're, you know, going to enter into, around what you see as added authorities that you have as an agency under the Clean Air Act, could you be more specific about some of the areas where you think you'll be able to exercise additional authority?
Madam Chair, Senator Dembrough, thank you for the question. In looking at our rule, it feels like we have pretty broad authority to do rulemaking. I'm not foreclosing the need for statutory involvement. Currently, what we're doing is canvassing a few other states that have a health-based, risk-based air toxics permitting program. Washington has one, California has one, and others. And really what it means is that based on a facility's use of a material and some calculation of potential emission, there's an ability for us to require either more monitoring, more study, or emission control, depending on what we find. That's kind of a tiered system that we're seeing in other states, but right now we're just gathering all the other states to look at it to see if that sort of thing may work for Oregon or it might not. We want to definitely tailor something not only to our need statewide, but also to what we're learning through all of this work to make sure we have an effective program. So we're looking elsewhere, and really we'll be rapidly moving forward with rulemaking to address this gap.
Mm-hmm. And follow up. And just, you know, in terms of the timeline that you're looking at to be able to, you know, to collect this information and then move into preliminary rulemaking. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, Representative Dembrough alluded to my timeline. We're going to actually start rulemaking in March. So that's next month, and we'll start that process by, you know, gathering, you know, informing the timelines and information that we have so that we can have an engaged discussion. But we're hoping to move in pretty quickly on this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Nose.
Madam Chair, thank you. The Senator asked my exact same question, so I'll pass.
Okay. Wow. Representative Rudin.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for your work you've done. I love the idea of the command working together. It's kind of unfortunate we've had this sort of a situation to require that. But anyway, my concerns this morning, in addition to all the other things you're doing, have to do with a major industrial site in my district, which has a Title V permit coming up next month. Mm-hmm. And some of the neighbors have been trying to get information about that company and about all of their documentation around their permit. And so how accessible is that information, and can we get it tomorrow?
Madam Chair, Representative Reardon, you're referring to Precision Cast,
yes,
which has a major permit, one of those Title V permits, and you're correct in that their permit is up for review and approval. To your question, obviously this all this information we've gathered, and one of the hotspot areas that is, you know, identified in the Moss study, as I understand, is around that location. So we're going to take all that back and help that guide us in terms of this permit process. To your question, we'll absolutely make information available that we have, and I'll go back to my staff if it's not available now to make sure that we can get it to. I know the community out there has asked for a get together to understand. We'll fulfill that request for sure around this for this facility.
Appreciate your attention to that. And then one follow up. And then there's also a question from the neighbors as well about perhaps getting some, Landis, for you, some guidance out to healthcare professionals to make sure that they can do the proper service to their clients. And I'm not sure I understand all of that, but I know there's more that might be done.
So two things, and then I'll turn it. Chair Peterson, members of the committee, currently that information is available. Our doctors are providing information directly to physicians around the community, and have that's been going on since January 21st. So that's one resource. Our experts are available to the medical community across the region. Secondly, there is the 211 hotline opportunity, and thirdly, we are posting all of our information on the on our website, healthcare.gov. And then I'll turn it over to Multnomah County for their additional work that they've been doing in this area.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Reardon, I want to expand on what Director Saxton mentioned there. We're currently, as a group, which includes the federal CDC consultants, the Oregon Health Authority, toxicologists from OSU, OHSU, and the County Health Department, are working on the fourth version of that guidance. It's almost every week we're going into production on this because of emerging information and then actual understanding from results as they're coming in, and how clinicians can interpret those. And again, like a lot of things, it's more complicated than we thought, which is why we're working on the fourth version of that. And they are distributed very, very broadly. There's a list of over 1,600 clinicians in the metro area that have signed up for alerts from public health. We distributed to all the medical directors of all the major health systems, and then through professional organizations as well. So we think we've got a good system for distributing the information, and we realize that it's dynamic and essentially are updating it every week.
Yeah. Dynamic was a word that came to my mind as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dick, I guess my question's to you, following up on what we heard from Senator Dimbrough. It sounds like you have all the authority you need, and you really don't need anything else from us to go forward and do what you need to do.
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, we're assuming at this point in time that we have a lot of authority to be able to go forward with rulemaking. However, my only however is in looking at what other states have and thinking about what we need in Oregon. If we need more authority, we'll come, but we're going to try to identify that very early. But at this point in time, in talking with our legal counsel, Department of Justice, they feel we have some fairly broad authority right now, working through our Environmental Quality Commission. But certainly, if there's a question about that, we would come back to this body and let you know.
Yeah, and that was one of the reasons why I wanted to have this hearing today, was to start that conversation on what potentially we might need to do as a legislative body next session if there's something.
Yeah, Madam Chair, what I would say to that is that in looking at everything that we have, the second we feel like there's a statutory need, we would come to this body and let you know for sure. Yeah.
Follow up.
So, because I would want to make sure I'm hearing right in the testimony, but it sounds like what you're lacking is basically the monitoring equipment for doing the job. Mm-hmm. And that's where the issue has been.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Widener, a couple things. Certainly more monitoring equipment is needed. There's no question. Also, rulemaking, you know, the pulling people in to do this, this quick rulemaking, that's appropriate to get proper engagement, and also the implementation phase. We need resources for that as well that have been identified.
Okay. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for this presentation. Director, the concern, I suppose, for many of us is this an isolated instance, or is this a systemic sort of thing? And so I would hope that this was something that was brought to the department's attention by good work by some other agency that found it, and that it wasn't some sort of an oversight that we could expect in some other areas. So share with us why this is an anomaly and not something that's that we can worry about in other places in the state.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Bentz, first of all, let me back up. The Moss study is very innovative. It's new information that highlighted some things that we didn't know, needing for us to follow up on air quality. That pointed to these two art glass manufacturing facilities that we're working with now. What we do not know, because we don't have a lot of the moss study in the Portland area is just, we're learning more and more about it and getting more information to see where that might look. What we don't know is, we're not assuming there's other problems, but what we do know is we don't have a risk-based, health-based permitting program that will help us identify that stuff up front in a way that we can have a permitting program to where there, if there is potential, we can be working with the industry and facilities. So quite honestly, we don't have a lot of information, but at this point in time, I'm not going to speculate that there are a lot of other problems elsewhere. We need to look into it, but I'm not going to say there aren't any. We just need to start gathering more information to make sure we're covering things that we haven't been covering before.
Follow up. And I understand that approach. It's just that I think most of us, I have thought that the permitting process was fairly broad, and that we wouldn't be looking at a situation like this, which appears to have been something that was missed. Mm-hmm. And so it looks as though, and again, I'm not an expert at all, so the question becomes, are there other parts of our processes that require some sort of a rebuilding or restructuring mm-hmm. so that we're not having the same hearing next year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Bentz, the current structure of the permitting is such that it's based on total amount of emissions, whether it be particulate or other things, and then depending on how much is emitted, it goes into a different permitting scheme, if you will. Also, different sectors of manufacturing have federal requirements that require certain technologies based on their size, based on what they do. That's what we've been applying in Oregon. What we have not been applying in Oregon is really this risk-based, health-based look at things. It's all the permitting system now currently is all based on throughput, if you will, in emission and size. There's not a look in our permitting program at potential impacts to nearby residents and toxic emissions, and that's what looking at some of the other states that have something similar. That's what we want to apply here. And from my perspective, Representative Bentz, that's the gap that we don't have in Portland that will help us stay ahead of this of this kind of issue.
Thank you,
Representative Kinnegar.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your comments. This is also personal to me. My children went to Cleveland High School. I have a lot of constituents that live in that area, have gone to schools in that area. I know that there's probably going to be a lot of talk from people who are following you and other panels about the lack of expectation or minimum standards that we have even to date, and I hope we make a lot of progress on that. But for those that we have, the minimum standards that we have right now, you talked about asking for $1.5 million more for monitoring equipment. How much of that is one-time money versus how much of that is for personnel? I know that natural resource agencies took a hit during the recession, and you've lost some of your enforcement capacity. Could you address, just for the standards we have now, which I hope will be strengthened, but for what we have now, how much more personnel do you need, as well as mm-hmm. equipment, to be able to effectively monitor industry?
Madam Chair, Representative Kinnegar, thank you for the question. When we ask for monitoring equipment, that includes people, because we need to deploy instruments, we need to collect samples, we need to do the analysis or contract it out, whatever the case may be. Our request includes a total of 8 FTE, both in the monitoring side and on the implementation side that I talked before. Our view is it's for this biennium, but would carry through and ongoing, because we don't, the one-time need is immediate right now, but I expect when we do more and different kinds of monitoring that are different than what we've done before, that we're going to want to continue that, not only in Portland, but beyond. So we'll need to continue that investment.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on my good colleague's question there,
I would like to come away from this meeting with the assurance, Director Peterson, that we're not just, obviously we've got a problem in Portland, we know that, mm-hmm. but we could have a problem in Eugene. We may have a problem in Klamath Falls or Medford, and I don't want to have to replicate this situation again in the near future. So to the extent that you could you keep this committee appraised of exactly, if you've got a package you're putting together that's to address this problem and hopefully that which may be occurring or could occur across the state, could you keep us appraised of that? If you're looking for funding, we want to make sure we're doing everything we need to do, but again, let's not just, you know, look at the problem that's on our plate today, because this, you know, Bullseye Glass has been in that neighborhood for a long time.
Yeah.
There could be other businesses and other residential neighborhoods across the state of Oregon that could have the same situation, but we just haven't sampled the moss. You know, what else could be going on? And that's what I'm concerned with. So I would just ask, and with your permission, Madam Chair, you report back to this committee as we go through the interim period prior to next session so we know exactly what's before us.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Johnson, absolutely. I certainly don't want to replicate the situation that we're dealing with now. Obviously, it's opened a lot of, given us a lot of information that we need to absolutely follow up on. You know, the requests that we're making for funding is certainly to respond to the immediate thing, but it's going to be a statewide program that we're looking forward to, and I'm more than happy to report back to the interim committee at your pleasure.
Thank you. Quick follow-up.
Dr.
Lewis, you mentioned particulate matter is a prime concern, and you mentioned diesel smoke. It's my understanding that wood burning and particulates that come from fireplaces, wood stoves, and so forth, they're actually the worst offender in the Portland area. I guess my question's back to you again, Director. We passed House Bill 3068, I think, in the last session that directed DEQ create this work group to figure out what can we do to help residents shift from wood burning to other heating implements and devices. Could you just give us a brief little synopsis of where that process is now? Because I know you have something underway that's mm-hmm. directed towards that problem.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, you're correct. There's a task force working now to really look at what is our broader solution to wood smoke, and their ongoing discussion to highlight what you said. Wood smoke particulate is a big issue in the state in terms of health and meeting federal air standards. We have problems around the state, or near problems around the state, including in Portland, mostly out towards the Hillsborough area. And so the process of educating, working with our local governments and incentives to move people off of non-efficient wood-burning stoves to more efficient processes has paid great dividends in other parts of the state, and we'll continue to do that work. And I know the task force committee is trying to identify other opportunities, and I don't have the detail or where they're at today, but it's important work that we need to carry forward with.
Thank you. I think what this has shown, this experience has shown, is that we can't just have one method. Diesel and wood stove air particulate matter are a huge general concern to the population, but we can't ignore what's happening in these site-specific emitters of heavy metals and air toxics either. You know, you've mentioned a couple times the health-based, risk-based assessment that they have in, or the standards that they have in Washington and California. Is this something that you would see needing statutory authority to do, or is that within your rulemaking ability?
Madam Chair, it's my understanding, looking at the what we know about currently, what we know about Washington for sure, and some about California, is that we think we have the administrative authority to be able to do those. But again, we haven't scrubbed them. We haven't sat down and just crossed them very specifically with our rule. But right now, again, working with Department of Justice, we think we can move forward with the administrative rule. But, you know, we're just in the process of looking at it. And, you know, I'm not at this point advocating picking up one state and dropping it down into Oregon without really looking at it and make sure it's going to fit our needs based on some of the unique things that we've learned. But again, if we need legislative authority, I'm certainly not going to be shy about coming to this body and say we need some more authority in this area to make sure we have an effective program, and we'll keep you apprised.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you look at the MOS study and where and how it identified areas all around the Portland area that were potential areas concerned, but we have not yet identified the source of those emitters. You know, some of them are in my district in East Portland. There's some in Southwest Portland. They're really all over. And I support you know what other people have been saying is that and potentially all over the state as well. I mean, in what do we need to do if we go to this health-based risk-based model? Will we know? Will we be able to have an inventory of what businesses, what industries, what are they using? So we at least have that knowledge of what's out there that could potentially be concerned.
Madam Chair, that's absolutely be the foundation of our program to make sure that folks that are using or industries that are using materials that potentially could lead to toxic emissions that there would be covered under this health risk-based approach. And keep in mind, the MOS information is really new stuff, and I'm very excited that we have it and that we partnered with the U.S. Forest Service. We're still needing to do, it's not linear in terms of getting more information on what air is relative to the MOS, but we need to do more of that around areas of hotspot identification. But we're not waiting for that to go forward with rulemaking. It's going to be parallel track, so we can learn more about what we're learning from the U.S. Forest Service data, and try to do similar types of monitoring around other parts of the state. That's some of the things that we're looking at.
Okay, thank you. Well, and we do look forward to having updates at this committee.
You betcha.
That you're doing.
Happy to do so.
Thank you all. Next, we
Madam
have.
Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Helm.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. One quick question that occurred to us while we were listening to your testimony is, my understanding so far is that the concerns are about outdoor air quality. Mm-hmm. Should folks feel worried about their indoor air quality because of any interaction between the two? For any of you.
Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, there have been some preliminary indoor air quality tests. We have not reviewed those. We will be reviewing those, and we will keep you informed of anything we learn. And obviously, as Director Peterson has said, we are intentionally taking a very wide-focused look at all aspects of this challenge. So I'll go back and look specifically at that data, and then we'll go from there. I don't have an answer for you today.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So next I'd like to call up Hu Young, Mark Riskadel, and Dr. Linda George. Anybody can care to start. Just don't forget to say your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for providing an opportunity to comment on such an important ongoing issue. My name is Hu Yong, a longtime resident of Portland, an alumni of Cleveland High School, and I'm the executive director of OPAL Environmental Justice Oregon. OPAL stands for Organizing People, Activating Leaders. We are a grassroots community organization that builds power for environmental justice and civil rights amongst communities of color and low-income folks. OPAL emerged from decades of community organizing in response to air toxins and our exposure to other pollutants. Portland has a long history of community resistance to environmental racism and classism. It is important for all of us to recognize those that have come before this crisis and those that will remain when the cameras are turned off. Time and again, we experience a sudden surge in awareness of these issues, as now during this discussion of arsenic and cadmium from glass manufacturing, and time and again, very little is done to resolve them. Our people are often excluded from conversations about the urban environment, the spaces where we live, work, learn, play, and pray. Uplifting community voices, past, present, and future, is why I'm here to speak to you. Teresa Kishi Soto, who couldn't be here today, is one of our core members of Bus Riders Unite. Portland's Transit Riders Union. A woman of color in her 60s, Teresa is continuing her education. Processes like this are often inaccessible to low-income people of color, seniors, and students held early in the morning, an hour away from where we live. In 2003, Teresa's apartment complex on 125th and Foster Road experienced air quality issues from auto emissions and industrial pollution. The smells were putrid, she said. She could no longer sleep in her own bedroom. The toxic air affected her lungs, such that she could not walk to the bus without coughing up phlegm and having difficulty breathing. In 2004, the air quality monitoring at 122nd and Powell was removed after consistently registering the worst air quality in the region. Today, Teresa is still living in the same apartment complex, and the quality of the air hasn't improved. She's been breathing foul air for over a decade. This is not a lack of advocacy around air toxins. Despite decades of outcries from across the region, polluters have managed to prevent meaningful action. Industries must be held accountable for releasing air toxins. Mobile emissions must be reduced and mitigated. Oregon Department of Environmental Quality and other jurisdictions have done very little to protect our communities, and all residents of Portland suffer for it, particularly low-income people and people of color who experience disproportionate exposure as well as higher rates of asthma and low birth rates, to name just two. DEQ is inconsistent or failing in its duty. The law gives them the authority to act, but they refuse. DEQ receives funding in part by selling pollution permits, which represents a clear conflict of interest. Every new polluter is a new source of revenue. DEQ doesn't assess health impacts when issuing pollution permits, a clear abdication of duty. DEQ doesn't consider construction a source of emissions despite obvious air quality impact. DEQ fails to meaningfully regulate highly dangerous diesel particulate matter. DEQ collects data but fails to distribute, interpret, or apply that data for meaningful public benefit. For decades, DEQ has failed to heed the demands of low-income people and people of color. Teresa couldn't be here today, but she is here in spirit, where all these powerful advocates who have been working on these issues tirelessly, not just since the bullseye news broke, but for decades. These are the long-standing demands of Portland's environmental justice community. We demand that you let us lead and address the unequal burden of toxic air we face. We demand that DEQ's responsiveness to community concerns be a primary consideration for the retention of DEQ's leadership. We demand that DEQ strengthen its connection to our most impacted communities through authentic resource engagement of people of color and low income in our communities. We demand that DEQ reports on emissions plaguing us in a way that we can understand to inform us as we lead. We demand DEQ regularly releases comprehensive data revealing the total cumulative impact of emissions in our neighborhoods rather than just individual source reports. We demand DEQ consider the public health impact of issuing pollution permits. We demand that the polluters are no longer taken at their word when they report on their own emissions because they are not often truthful. DEQ and other agencies should take an active role in assessing the truth on behalf of the public interest. We demand that testing for impacted communities, body, air, water, and soil, be provided at the expense of polluters. Polluters must also bear the cost of repairing any damage that is discovered and pay for damages to life and property. The status quo is environmental racism. A failure to improve and employ DEQ's regulatory process in these ways is a failure to listen to the voices of the most impacted people in our communities. People like Teresa and the people in this room, the lack of leadership on this issue is unacceptable. OPAL stands in solidarity with impacted communities across the region who live at whose lives are at stake in this discussion. OPAL, Bus Riders Unite, the Youth Environmental Justice Alliance, and our allies will be engaging our members and communities on this issue. Act in a way that helps us breathe easier. Progress can be achieved. We simply ask you to champion our cause in the face of industry and bureaucratic pushback. Thank you for hearing us and look forward to ongoing opportunities to engage moving forward.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Riskadel. I'm the Executive Director of NEDC, the Northwest Environmental Defense Center, based up at Lewis and Clark Law School here in Portland. Our organization's mission is to preserve and protect the environment and natural resources of the Pacific Northwest. We do that frequently by directly initiating enforcement actions against polluters, and we also regularly interface with state agencies in their application of administrative regulatory structures in the environmental context. And the agency that we do that with most regularly and routinely is the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. I submitted extensive written testimony, so I'm not going to belabor some of those rather tedious points that I raised in that testimony, but I do want to sort of set the stage by pointing out that what we're faced with today, as characterized by the entire federal delegation representing the city of Portland and the Portland metropolitan area, is a public health emergency. This is a very significant matter that we're faced with, and it demands a response. The federal delegation has rightly, I think, demanded greater responsiveness from the U.S. EPA to respond by initiating additional measures to deal with technology-based standards that would be appropriate to some of the facilities at issue. But it's not adequate to sit and wait for EPA to do something at some point in the indeterminate future. All fingers, really early in this process, and since it's been 3 weeks now since these stories have broke recently about Bozai Glass and the hotspots in the Portland metropolitan area, have been pointed most regularly at Oregon DEQ. So I'm going to be talking just a little bit about that agency and referring back to the Bozai Glass case study because I think it's quite instructional, and it really does get to some of the points that you've raised in your, I think, very well-stated questions and the concerns that I've been hearing from the community. There's really a sort of culture of regulatory captivity within Oregon DEQ and specifically within the Air Quality Permitting Program. There's sort of, and that's something that's common to any regulatory agency, but I think it's most common in this particular context, and the way that it plays out in the Bozai Glass particular case study is particularly instructive. And sort of seeing it, I've been dealing with this stuff for almost 15 years now, and so I see it in all different sorts of contexts all the time. And your eyes sort of glaze over a lot of the time, and it's a little bit overwhelming. But it's really refreshing to me to see it through the eyes of concerned citizens that are faced with this stuff for the first time, and through your eyes as well. I mean, you've asked some really interesting, intriguing questions here today. And what those questions raise are sort of a hope, a belief, a presumption, really, that this agency was doing a lot of the things that you presumed that it was doing, that it had an understanding in the Bozai Glass context specifically of what was going into the production process, what was happening during that process, what was being emitted, what specific toxic emissions were being emitted in the local communities, what control technology was being used to reduce or eliminate those, what the effects were, what communities were being affected by that, what sort of the range of that, those effects, what were those health-based effects. And it's been astonishing, really, since the stories have been breaking, given the incredibly insightful and diligent work of the media. I mean, I think the media and the public are heroes in this context because they've been really driving this narrative forward and refusing to just sit back and listen to the agency and say, you guys have got this under control, we're just going to sit back and let you deal with it. And so to see those concerns come forward, to see the way that they haven't been addressed historically, and then to hear the director of the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality state really that what this requires is more process. What we did hear this morning for the first time was a sense that this rulemaking that would deal with toxic hotspot regulation, I've kind of gone into great detail in the written comments I've submitted of what that might look like. That rulemaking at least is going to commence on date certain. I don't know how, I guess the general time frame, I don't know how many of you have personally been involved in a formal rulemaking process, but that's an incredibly time-consuming, painful process for just general people to involve themselves in. I mean, I've been through that quite a few times, and you know, honestly, this the friendly, well-paid faces that you'll see in the next panel completely dominate that conversation and predetermine the outcome of those types of regulatory processes. So we've got these formal rules that are maybe going to happen at some point in the future. They're maybe going to reach some outcome at the end of the day. And I think that the points about requiring oversight, getting reports back throughout that process are critical. I've laid out in my comments a clear path forward for exerting existing regulatory authority. It's not at all the case necessarily. The agency absolutely has adequate statutory authority to do much, much more than it's been doing in this context. In the context I'm speaking is the regulation of hazardous air pollutants. It clearly has room in its regulations, especially with source-specific strategies that it could be implementing today, not waiting around for rulemaking that may happen somewhere down the road. That programmatic outcome of rulemaking is going to be beneficial, obviously, from a statewide perspective. But in the meantime, the agency needs, through you, to be pressured to do more aggressively. And it needs to demand, the agency really needs to be instilled with a culture of excellence. It needs to be held accountable. Mm-hmm. And there needs to be a greater degree of belief and faith restored in that agency, because it's really been significantly diminished. I think with that, I'll probably leave it. I really encourage you to fund the obvious outcomes that do need to happen. There's clearly a significant lack of adequate monitoring that would have identified some of these problems had they ever been monitored for initially, and so we'll be hearing about that.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and panel members, for inviting me to speak. My name is Linda George. I'm an atmospheric chemist and professor of environmental science and management at Portland State University. I've been studying air quality for 30 years. For the last decade, I've been conducting research on the variation of air pollution in cities. The discovery of elevated air toxics in Portland neighborhoods is very upsetting, but it's not surprising. Air toxic waste is a consequence of producing the many goods that consumers want. Waste is a necessary product of consumption and must be controlled. Elevated air toxic exposure is the failure of regulatory systems at every level to address the known risks of toxic emissions to human health. As a result of this failure, there are many so-called hotspots of unhealthy air in Portland, and as the public becomes aware of these, they will demand action. In the near future, personal air quality sensors will become available to the public, and there will be more and more public outrage. We do not need to wait for the public to discover hotspots. I believe that Oregon can proactively do a much better job in improving air quality. The 1990 Clean Air Act amendments established EPA's Air Toxics Program. EPA's Urban Air Toxics Strategy's goal is to reduce cancer risk from urban air toxics by 75%. The Oregon DEQ was delegated the authority by EPA to conduct work in Oregon. We are nowhere near 75% reduction. Why has Oregon been unable to fulfill the goal of reducing cancer risk from urban air toxics? The Oregon DEQ was one of the first state agencies in the country to conduct a detailed analysis of air toxic emissions and produced the first air toxic assessment in 2006. DEQ also established health benchmarks for air toxics as required. I was involved in the early stages of this process. The air toxics modeling exercises, to my knowledge, did not result in any reduction actions, even though major hotspots were identified at that point. The Portland Air Toxic Solution process was supposed to analyze air toxics assessments and make recommendations to reduce risk and act on them, but failed to do so. Unlike for criteria pollutants such as ozone, there are no federal consequences when air toxic levels exceed health standards. I believe that DEQ felt that significant improvement would come with federal emission rules for major and small sources. These federal rules are still in various stages of implementation. The funding level, however, the funding level and culture of DEQ limits its ability to go beyond compliance with federal and state laws. They do no more, no less. Since Oregon laws mimic federal laws, when the federal process stalled, Oregon's efforts effectively also stalled out. We do not need another toothless PATS project process that does not produce Oregon rulemaking on emissions. In addition, we cannot rely on simply following the minimum federal guidelines for air toxics emissions. The federal regulatory framework does not take into account proximity to sources. Research in my lab and many others show how important it is to take proximity into account when assessing health impacts. In a city like Portland, where sources are woven in with residences, we may need to do far more in achieving reduction of risk. In other words, even if a source complies with emission rules coming from the federal government, Oregon citizens living near the source may still breathe unhealthful air. This is the situation leading to this hearing. This did not have to be the case. The EPA has given the state the freedom to control air toxics as they see fit within some guidelines. Other states, notably California, have been particularly aggressive and effective on toxic reductions with modeling, monitoring, incentives, and enforcement. So what can Oregon do to move forward more quickly and effectively? Oregon at this time can move forward by committing itself to a specific goal and timetable for toxic reduction that is verified by monitoring. It has been decades since the first air toxic. Since the first air toxic assessment, and we have very little to show for it. Oregon must see itself as a state that aspires to achieving the goal of 75% reduction of air toxics risk as soon as possible, at least 20% a year. This will require innovation in modeling, monitoring, incentive structures, and financial and technical support to emitters and enforcement. It is not sustainable to achieve reduction by shutting down every business that produces air waste. We need to provide technical assistance, low-interest loans, and incentives to reduce emissions. We need to identify problem areas and have a clear, fair plan for addressing them. Environmental protection and education must be a shared responsibility and not siloed in DEQ. I believe improving air quality will be best achieved through partnerships between DEQ, other federal, state, and local agencies, and universities. Health departments are a vital partner in communicating risk to the public. University and the research arms of federal mission agencies are a source of innovation for emission reduction technologies and practices and are well positioned and have the freedom to conduct relevant research studies. As an example, we recently published a paper showing how Portland tree canopy can reduce the impact of air pollutants. Another project looks at how intelligent traffic management can reduce vehicle emissions. These projects point to ways to innovatively reduce the impact of emissions. The U.S. Forest Moss study was an example of an innovative metal screening approach, an approach that DEQ would not have had the resources to develop. This screening enabled DEQ to target sampling. Moss sampling, by the way, is not able to assess diesel particulate matter. There will be a need to develop other comprehensive approaches to assess diesel particulate matter and wood smoke. California, Washington, Texas, and many other states fund air quality studies with the universities. This has the dual benefit of producing cost-effective, relevant research and the training of the next generation of agency employees. Oregon must invest in air toxic reduction. The human impact of elevated air toxics are significant and costly. I urge the legislature to take steps to immediately set up a timetable and goals for air toxic reduction with the funding necessary to achieve these goals. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Rudin.
Thank all of you for your testimony. Really easy question. I don't see your testimony online, and can you provide that for us?
Please? Absolutely.
Mark Ears is on, but really very instructive and very helpful. And, thank you.
I'll make sure. We're just figuring out. You can leave it if you have it with the committee administrators if you have that. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quick, your presentation was well thought out, and you've done a lot of research and study. It's nice to have somebody who's done this for 30 years, and you're taking into consideration industry and everything as well. I'm just wondering if you could get us some of your reports and findings, because sometimes I wonder if maybe our land use laws don't create some of these problems that we have, and just kind of give us a comprehensive, because we have to make decisions on this, and everybody back there needs a job. Mm-hmm. So if we go after these businesses with a stick, they're not going to be here. They're not going to locate here. They're not going to come here. Now you have a lot of unemployed people that have clean air because the industry picked up and left. So I enjoyed your presentation. You've thought things out. You know what needs to happen, and any information you could feed this panel, I would greatly appreciate.
Thank you, Representative Vince.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I really appreciate your all three of your testimony. But Mark, I have a question for you. We're pretty good in as lawyers, because I'm one, in coming in and throwing rocks after the fact. What have you been doing in advance of this to prompt the DEQ to do stuff that it could have done to avoid this today?
Well, I think certainly in the realm of the sort of path forward, which I think is the way to look, how, you know, where do we go from here? The reference to what California has done is really quite astonishing. I mean, they've been, when we think about what Oregon could do, when we look at what California has been doing for the past 25 years, that's 25 years of doing what Oregon DEQ is contemplating moving forward in the development of this health-based risk assessment process to deal with toxic hotspots. So that informs, and certainly in my estimation, the path forward. I'd love to see the agency be bolder and stronger and willing to implement existing strategies to do more in the meantime. But that's sort of that regulatory path forward. I think there's good examples out there that exist that we can draw from.
Follow-up.
Right. Well, of course, my question was, what have you been doing before today in this regard? And I know we've had hearings on issues having to do with air quality over the past 4 or 5 years here at this committee. But in your organization, you focus on trying to make our lives better when it comes to the environment. And I'm sure the DEQ, if asked, would say, why didn't someone come to us 4 years ago or five and suggest the very things that are being suggested in this hearing today? So I'm asking you, does your organization try to find those things out in advance of these unfortunate events and then guide the DEQ, harass the DEQ, suggest to the DEQ, whatever you do? Are you doing it?
Sure, yeah, that's a great question. Certainly through the PATS, the Portland Air Toxic Solutions process, we had a representative at the table throughout that process. It was our hope and belief that that last word of that phrase, the Portland Air Toxic Solutions, was going to result in solutions. It didn't. That was a very frustrating endeavor. That was a multi-year-long process. If we're looking specifically at this one element of the I encourage you to go back and read the executive summary of the report that came out of that and see the industrial metals facilities that were targeted as one of the high priority categories for what, you know, we need to deal with these emissions and what's been done to deal with them by the agency. As far as we can see, nothing.
Thank you.
Representative Geyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just hoping that you can put that report on OLIS as well, please.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Representative Helm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question for Dr. George. In this state, we tend to think we're pretty good at developing technology. And you hinted at this in your testimony. I learned just by coincidence yesterday that one of the coffee roasters in Portland was having emissions problems of a different sort, and they were able to find a device that recombusted their emissions and eliminated the problem. Mm-hmm. So, that's a great anecdotal story, but could you comment just a little bit on what you might think the capability for technological innovation might be in this area?
Yeah, I think, rules drive that kind of innovation. So when and also I think awareness. I really believe that these small businesses in particular have no desire to harm the public. And I think when they become aware of these issues and there is some kind of enforcement behind it, that they will seek out solutions to reduce emissions if they are provided some assistance. I mean, these can be very costly technologies as well. So, but I agree with you. I think that there will be innovations forthcoming when there's a need for them.
So a little carrot, little stick.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you all very much for your testimony and for coming down here today. All right, next. Next, we have Mary Postlewaite, Sarah Livingston, and Mary Pivido.
Thank you for having us here today. I wrote a speech for you, but I'm not going to say it because everybody else is pretty much
it. And could you please state your name for the record?
I'm Mary Postlewaite. I'm a community health worker in North Portland and a resident and a mother and an activist for our children. The things that were in my speech for you guys that weren't said was 450 plus people die a year in Oregon due to air toxins and pollutants. That's more than murder and drunk driving combined. That's a lot. That needs to change. Every day I wake up and I watch the news and I see things on the TV that are death and destruction. And so I fight for that, for our kids' future, only to find out that when they walk outside, every breath that they take is killing them. That's not okay with me. It's not all right. We have enough problems in the world to have to deal with than to have to worry about the air that our children are breathing. That's one of the four main components that a body needs to live, next to food, water, and light. And if you take that from us, then we can't live. The DEQ has known about this since 2005 and before. Here we are in 2016, and I am progressively getting sicker and sicker every day. I live in a hot spot, and there's all kinds of odors and everything out there that has just been going on for the 16 years that I've lived there. And now I have all kinds of health concerns. My son has mental health issues now. They weren't present before. Now, I don't know if that's what's causing it, but it sounds like it could be a good cause of what my family is going through. I have been in these meetings before, and I have seen nothing happen. Nothing. Do you know that the state of Oregon spends between $2 and $4 billion a year taking care of the sickness from cancer, medicine, care, people dying? $2 to $4 billion. And we're worried about spending $1.5 million to retrofit things to make the air better for people? $2 to $4 billion. I know that we could do a lot better with that money than to have to keep putting it into sick people that are not going to get better if we do not fix the air. Period. I mean, I see a lot of people here, and I'm not, you know, I don't know about the DEQ and all of those laws and bylaws. I don't know anything about that. But what I do know is that I watch my children get up every morning and they're sick and they're coughing. And I watch them go to school and they have to go to schools with the worst air quality in Multnomah County. And then I have to deal with the sicknesses. You guys don't deal with the sicknesses. I do. I deal with it. Me and my neighborhood. We just want to be able to live. We just want to be able to get up in the morning and take a breath of fresh air like you guys can. We deserve that. We deserve it. I work hard for you guys. And I don't feel like our deaths should be payment for that. And that's what's happening. If you really want to get down to the nitty-gritty, this is what's happening. We're dying so that big businesses can keep on making money. Our kids are dying. Where's their future going to be if we don't stop whatever is going on now? Where's our children's future? It's already screwed up enough with everything else that's going on. Not to mention that now they have to worry about breathing. Breathing. Something you do from the day you are born is breathe. and now we have to worry about it? That's ridiculous. Absolute ridiculous. I came back to Oregon because we live in the great Pacific Northwest, where it's so green and so beautiful. How green is it really? Southeast Portland has been advised not to eat their own vegetables, their own homegrown food. Why? Because the state of Oregon can't get their crap together to fix the air emissions so that they can eat their own food. And yes, I am worried about the quality of the air in my house, because when I open my door, the air outside comes in. So of course I'm worried about that too. Of course. I don't have any kind of machine in my house that's going to purify my air every time I, you know, want to breathe good air. I'm just a regular person. I have regular things in my house. I open my door and I breathe regular, nasty stench when I get up in the morning. That's what I get. The way it smells, it's got to be doing something. It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. I am disgusted with the state of Oregon and how many years I've lived here and how sick I've gotten since I've been here. I just don't know what to say. Other than, you guys need to do something. The money that they're asking for to fix this is nothing compared to the money that you guys have spent for years and years and years of taking care of people like myself who have gotten sick due to different environmental things. I know you guys don't want to keep taking care of my medical costs and have to have my kids go to the hospital all the time. I know that nobody wants to pay for that. I know you wouldn't want to pay for that, or you wouldn't want to pay for that. Neither do I. And that's what we're having to do. We have to do that because we can't afford to go and live in the West Hills. We have to live here. And it's not fair that we have to live here and get treated like dirt, because that's what we get treated like. And it's not okay. Not okay. I want to breathe like you guys do. I want my children to wake up and be happy and know that they're healthy. But they can't do that right now. They can't do that. You got our children going to schools with air that is just... I can't believe that I'm having this conversation. I fight every day for my kids. Every day. Against all kinds of things. And this is the last thing that I ever thought I would have to fight for. Air. Something as simple as taking a breath.
Thank you so much for being here. I know that this is very emotional. I appreciate you taking the time to be here.
Hi, Madam Peterson and members of the committee. Thank you for inviting me here to speak with you today. My name is Sarah Livingstone, and my husband, my 15-month-old baby girl, and I live in Southeast Portland, 5 blocks from Bullseye Glass, which is within the half-mile radius of where the Oregon Health Authority told residents not to eat out of their gardens. This past January, I had 3 trips to the ER for not being able to breathe and severe chest pain. I was diagnosed with pneumonia and pleural effusion, which is fluid between the linings of your lungs. I am normally a very healthy person, and this came out of nowhere. At the time, I did not know about Bullseye Glass heavily polluting our neighborhood 5 blocks from our house with cadmium, arsenic, chromium, and other toxic heavy metals. The story had not yet broken, and they had not yet suspended these heavy metals. It was not until we took our 15-month-old daughter in for a routine checkup on February 9th that our pediatrician told us how seriously this heavy metal pollution was affecting her beloved patients, as well as her own family. Her own son's test results came back very high for cadmium, and they live in Ladd's Addition, much farther from Bullseye than us. When I told her we live only 5 blocks from Bullseye, she immediately had our daughter tested. I mentioned to her how sick I had been with my lung problems, and she said I should be tested right away as well. Cadmium and arsenic poisoning wreak havoc on the lungs and can cause cancer. We now know that they were using hexavalent chromium, which is very carcinogenic and damages the lungs. I currently cannot still take a deep breath and am having a lot of lung pain. My doctor has scheduled an x-ray in 2 weeks to make sure it is not cancer. As one can imagine, hearing that you may have cancer when you have a 15-month-old is terrifying and incredibly sad. I'm not the only one whose health is possibly affected by this air, toxic air pollution. Numerous people in my southeast neighborhood who live very close to Bullseye have contacted me, telling me they have very similar lung problems. A few women wrote me that they have had pleurisy, inflammation of the linings of their lungs, after they moved to this neighborhood that took 6 months out of their lives. They live within two blocks of me. Another young mother who ate out of her garden all this past summer while pregnant had a baby with an unexplainable hole in her lung and partial collapse. Yesterday, a 7-month pregnant mother named April, who lives a block from me and four blocks from Bullseye, received her heavy metal test results and has arsenic levels that are 59 UG, and they should be between 0 to 29. How does one calm the mind of a pregnant woman who is due in 2 months and who has heavy metals 2 to 3 times what is considered normal? Heavy metals can pass to the unborn baby and can cause birth defects. There are many more stories of my neighbor's health I could share with you. Do we finally have an answer to all the unexplainable cancer clusters in Portland, especially southeast Portland? My pediatrician, a well-respected doctor in Portland, and her peers believe this may be the answer. I've been in touch with her the past couple weeks for updated information, and she has told me that many of her young patients have test results coming back high for arsenic and cadmium. A few days ago, she emailed me saying, quote, "I have worked so hard in this community for 17 years keeping kids healthy, and this whole thing has broken my heart. I moved back to Portland to start and raise a family, like many people have done in the past and are currently doing. This is not the Portland that I thought I knew, and I feel like we have all been betrayed. The beautiful green city that we love is not so green. Quite the contrary, and it has been going on for many years. I feel like the rug has been pulled out from under my feet. Toxic heavy metal poisoning is not only a short-term health problem, but also a long-term one. It can take up to a decade to show itself. Are we to worry that in 5 or 10 years from now, our 15-month-old daughter will develop cancer or a behavioral disease caused by heavy metals, or that my husband's or my life will be shortened because of this? How does one not worry daily about this moving forward? A group of very concerned citizens in Portland came together when Bullseye Glass toxic air pollution was exposed a few weeks ago. We started the group, the Eastside Portland Air Coalition, and have teamed with Neighbors for Clean Air. I have been so impressed with the mobilization of our community around this. We have come together to support each other and to fight to help make right this public health emergency, and will not stop until air quality regulations have been changed to protect us. We have such a wonderful city and state and people who care so much about each other and our environment. Oregonians deserve to breathe air that does not make us sick. Quite frankly, everyone deserves to breathe air that does not make us sick. And we deserve a state government that enforces and supports this. Please make this right. We need your help. We are reaching out to you to take action to make our air safe for us and our children in our neighborhoods, city, and state. Thank you for your time and swift action on this. We are counting on you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chair Rebecca Peterson and all members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Pivoteau, and I'm the president and one of the co-founders of Neighbors for Clean Air. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today about the Oregon's air toxics crisis. Recent news coverage has focused on the time lag between when our state's Department of Environmental Quality first learned about the U.S. Forest Service's MOS findings in May 2015 and February 2016 when the public did. But the real delay by the agency to address toxic air pollution should be measured not in months, but in years and even decades. This is not a new problem, just a newly popular one. In 2009, 6 years after Oregon's air quality rules were amended to purportedly address the dangerous air toxics that Federal Clean Air Act doesn't, I stumbled on a national study showing that Chapman Elementary School, the PPS school that my three daughters have attended, ranks among the worst 2% in the nation for schools with exposure to toxic industrial air pollution. Motivated to action, a group of neighbors and fellow parents founded the grassroots organization Neighbors for Clean Air. Since then, we have taken on the pollution battles that our state regulators won't, in what has become an ongoing David versus Goliath fight. Without state-level accountability, we have been left with do-it-yourself air emissions regulations, relying on hard-won good neighbor agreements and odor regulations to make headway. Neighbors for Clean Air has been successful in winning small battles against big polluters like Esco Steel, Vigor, and Intel. We are proud of these victories because they don't come easy, yet they are far from enough. I specifically learned about Portland's elevated levels of cadmium and arsenic, along with diesel particulates and a dozen other toxics that exceeded the established health thresholds over 5 years ago as a member of DEQ's Portland Air Toxic Solutions Advisory Committee. I've submitted today into public record two documents that DEQ's staff shared with the committee several years ago. The problem is not that the agency charged with oversight of our state's air quality didn't know about the pollution in our air. As these documents clearly show, one summary memo from 2011 entitled North Portland Cadmium Source Investigation, as well as monitoring reports from 2005, regulators knew but failed to act to protect our health, which is one of its key missions. When more than 100 schools still fall in the worst 10% nationally for exposure to industrial pollution, and when 460 Oregonians' deaths each year are attributed to diesel exhaust, it's clear that this isn't a problem that can be fixed voluntarily, polluter by polluter. It needs to be fixed at the system level. We don't need more study. We don't need a work group. And you will pardon my skepticism at hearing Director Peterson talk about stakeholder involvement. While more money and new laws will certainly help, there are two concrete, proactive steps that DEQ can and should take now. Number one, DEQ should immediately require facility-by-facility risk assessment and management. It's astounding that a facility is required to report many of the toxic substances in their emissions, but there's no follow-on requirement to assess and manage the risk to public health. Number two, DEQ should set a diesel standard. Without a standard, diesel engines can last for more than 1 million miles and be rebuilt many times without pollution control. Unless we take action, 2 to 3 more generations of Oregon's children will be unnecessarily harmed before today's dirtiest engines are gone. With Washington and California far ahead of us, it's time to ask whether our state and its DEQ are capable of operating differently enough to protect public health from harmful air pollution. But I am delivering today with me over 4,687, I think the last time I checked, signatures that have been collected just in the last week from people like me, like Sarah, like Mary, who know that it's long past due that air emissions regulations be designed and carried out to protect Oregon's health, period. And right now, that's simply not the case. So thank you for your consideration of this critical issue.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? So I just want to thank you all again for coming here. I live in East Portland. My district is in East Portland. We have a garden, right? You think that you are in Portland for doing the eating healthy, eating local, trying to grow your own food. The scariest thing I can imagine as a mom with my two kids is to find out what I've been doing to feed my family is possibly endangering them. So I really appreciate you taking the time to be here today to do this. You know, we've done a lot of work in this body to be a leader so that Oregon can be a leader in big issues like making sure that we get reduced carbon emissions from the transportation sector, that we're looking at getting coal out of our electricity. These are things that I'm really proud to do. But when something like this comes up and you realize that for all that big work we're doing, there are things that there are potentially dangerous toxins in our environment, in our neighborhoods, at the local level that we're not aware of and that nothing has been done, it's very frustrating. And it's, I think, a wake-up call for myself and the other legislators that are here that we need to take more action on this. So I appreciate the work that you've been doing for years on this and again, taking the time to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So, Senate Chair.
Yes.
Can I just say also thank you as moms addressing this issue, a very powerful testimony. And if anyone has any doubt about the enormous effort that Mary Peabody has put into this, you could just Google her. She's been on the, I think, front page of the Oregonian on this years ago. We've been hearing about this. And I know there was effort. I'm sorry that Senator Denbrough is not here anymore. He and Representative Mitch Greenlick, chair of the Health Committee, did bring forward a couple of bills on diesel air last year. I know Mary Pivoto was very helpful in that effort as well. So thank you so much for being there for the long term, and thank you to all of the people who have become more recently aware of this, and it's going to take that kind of groundswell to make change. So thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Rudin.
I'd also like to thank everybody that testified today. I think if one thing that I've gotten out of this sort of our Flint, Michigan moment here, that I finally understand the question better, and so I thank you for that. I think I've been thinking more, are we meeting the standards rather than are we developing a healthy community and also maintaining our economic viability as well. So it's that kind of that balancing act. And so thank you for helping me understand that question, and I'm very eager to help advance this conversation, get
thank
more
you.
Of a more than a conversation.
Representative Whiteman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to thank you for your testimony and just coming up and sharing. It's tough when it gets emotional like this and everything, and just being strong and presenting to us. And just for your information, I think there's probably quite a few of us that have lived in, I was in Southeast Portland for a while on 122nd and Holgate. Had a sister who lived on Division while she was going to Portland State. So we know the area well. We've been in a lot of these areas, and I think that speaks for most of the members up here. So we've all lived in the same places, so we have a very good idea of what's going on. And Mary, thank you for this information here. This helps out the committee a lot, because we have to make very informed decisions when we're doing this and have a good balance on how we keep things together. And one of the things I'm seeing, the more I listen to the testimony and look at what's going on, and with your testimony, with the range and everything, it's some of our land use laws have created these problems. I mean, when I'm looking at this, I think that's probably one of the biggest issues we're dealing with, is not keeping people away from the industrial zones. And that would help tremendously, and then start planting trees around those industrial zones to help absorb some of this. So anyway, I thank every one of you for your testimony. And I mean, this helps us out a lot when we're making decisions on this committee. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next, we're going to call up Mike Friess and Tom Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Mike Friess with Associated Oregon Industries. Thank you again for holding the hearing. We're happy to be here. And I think just as a threshold matter, Bullseye Glass is not a member of ours, but it's something that it's highlighted some issues that I think a lot of our members are incredibly interested in. And there has been a long ongoing discussion with folks in the room and other folks around air toxics in Portland. Let me just start by saying that we certainly agree with the previous panel that everybody deserves to breathe clean air. I never sit up, and I would say that our members all fit into that same category. Not only do they own businesses, but they employ a lot of people that live in these communities. They themselves, in many cases, live in the same communities. And so to ensure that, and send their school, their kids to the, schools in the community. So it's an incredibly important issue to get right, and to make sure that that as we look forward, that there is that balance, as Representative Reardon mentioned, that you know we deserve and we deserve healthy communities. We also deserve a healthy business climate, and so we look forward to continuing to work with DEQ as they work through their regulatory process to identify the opportunities we have to address issues like this. It shouldn't be a surprise to any of you The AOI has been a long supporter of trying to address this issue, and hours of involvement in a number of public processes that have occurred around this particular issue. And then it also in front of this body, we've worked with the committee on the wood stoves issue. We've worked towards improving transportation investment, not only just our roads, bridges, and highways, but also public transit. We spent a lot of time sitting next to the agency supporting increased funding. I think that's one thing that you've heard, I think, from every panel today, is that more general funds are needed to support current programs. And we need to take the time and work collaboratively through this to ensure, again, that we meet these balances. So I know that our time's running short, and I want to make sure that my other panelist has plenty of time. But I just want to end with saying that we do look forward to continuing to work with DEQ and this body to ensure that that we strike the right decision both for our communities and for business. So thank you.
Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, my name is Tom Wood. I am a partner at the Stoll Reeves Law Firm. I am a former adjunct professor at Lewis and Clark Law School, where I taught the Clean Air Act for over a decade, and I'm appearing today in my role as the chair of the Air and Energy Committee for Associated Oregon Industries. It was in that role with AOI that I worked extensively with DEQ, a number of environmental advocacy groups, and academics and stakeholders about a dozen years ago in a really interesting process where, for the first time, DEQ recognized it didn't have an air toxics program and that there was a significant gap between what the feds covered and what the state was covering. So they convened this group, and we worked 4 years on coming up with a program for air toxics. We looked at all the other states in the country. DEQ did a huge amount of research, and we cherry-picked the best parts of those other programs. The California program that you heard mention of earlier, that's already included in the Oregon program. This program was then brought together and presented by consensus, by the environmental groups, by the academics, by the industrial community, and by the agency, and it was adopted. And we've heard nothing about that program really today. It actually consists of three different programs. The geographic program, which allows DEQ to look at broad areas. You heard a little bit of mention on that today. That was the Portland Air Toxics Study. There's then a separate component to the program that specifically authorizes DEQ to come up with source category standards. So if you have an issue like bullseye, they have that authority there already to come up with categorical standards. And then the third component is they have something called the safety net program. And they said, and everyone agreed, we needed something like that. If something slips through the cracks, if you have a bullseye glass that pops up and has slipped through the regulatory cracks otherwise, they can require a source-specific risk assessment. That's already in the rules. It's been there for almost 10 years. It's not been required in this situation, but I think it's important to know that we have a program. It's a very robust program, and it's a program that really needs to be implemented. And I would suggest that the issue that we have before us is more an issue of how the actual rules on the books are being implemented, as opposed to the need to spend a bunch of time with further advisory committees coming up with any new rules. And then, of course, as everybody has said, the absolute funding component. DEQ is really hamstrung if they can't go out there and be operating the monitors that are needed to be able to detect whether a site-specific risk assessment is necessary. So I would strongly urge that the focus be on using the tools that we have rather than expending a lot of resources, which are already scarce, on developing new tools. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since you were a professor and everything and have been in this a long time, so I'm sitting here listening to this. I mean, it seriously sounds like land use is one of the biggest problems that has created this. And it's easy to sit here and beat up on DEQ with the news stories and everything that's come out with them. But I want to get to the root of the problem. And with everything you've seen, everything you've dealt with when you're a professor and dealing with environmental quality, would you say that would probably be the biggest and easiest thing we could attack right now in siting our facilities and everything to help with this problem?
Land use is always a challenge. I mean, that is just an underlying challenge as sources get closer to residents and you see issues. I mean, years ago, I worked with a facility down in Coburg where they had had an industrial park and it was surrounded by a pig farm, which is about the best thing to stick next to an industrial park. And then someone came in and got a change in the land use and they converted the pig farm to high-end housing. And so suddenly you had less than the distance MEDU of housing that was being built right next to an industrial park. That's a land use issue, and there's nothing that DEQ can do to try and fix land use issues. So I agree. I think that's a real concern.
I understand what you're saying because I watched houses go in, and it was called Millview Estates. Mm-hmm. So just to give you an idea of how close it was to a paper mill.
Mm-hmm. Thank
you. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the testimony. You mentioned that it's a matter of investment, probably by us. Mm-hmm. Do you have a suggestion when it comes to prioritization of that investment? In other words, we've got limited resources. Where do you recommend we spend them?
Personally, my opinion is the best thing we can do is have more ambient monitoring. I mean, Associate Oregon Industries has always supported DEQ in seeking additional funds for monitoring. There was money that was given by the legislature last session for monitoring on Swan Island. And I mean, the better the information, the better the data, the better everyone is able to respond to it, whether it's a resident in the neighborhood or it's the agency or it's you folks.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Wood, you mentioned California and their standards. We've heard from a couple of panelists that Oregon needs to adopt what California has already implemented and so forth. But could you talk a little bit more specifically about that? You mentioned that in your testimony. From your perspective, it sounds like we have looked to try to glean some of the better working portions, and we currently have that, but those measures just aren't being implemented by DEQ.
Representative Johnson, I'd love to, because one of the things that was looked at in the program, when the program was being developed during this whole consensus effort, was that most states, their air toxics program, and this is true of most of the California program and all of the Washington program, both of which you've heard reference to today, but I'd say it's probably for 98% of the states, they look at the sources when the sources make a change. So if you had a situation like Bullseye, it would never come across that program because unless you come in and you seek a new type of permit, they do not do any sort of assessment whatsoever. Now, California does have a supplementary program they call it the 2588 program, and it allows them the authority, the state the authority, to be able to come to a specific source and say, we want you to do first a screening assessment, and then if you fail the screening assessment, to do a site-specific risk assessment. It is hugely expensive for the agency. It's hugely expensive for the source. It's hugely expensive for the community. But they push through and they do that. They do that where they view a specific risk. That was the concept that was underlying the safety net program that we've got in our program. It was exactly what we were modeling after. And you can look through and see, I mean, the opening to that section of the rules is, you know, the purpose of the air toxic safety net program is to address human exposures at public receptors, fancy name for people's houses, to air toxics emissions from stationary sources that are not addressed by other regulatory programs, the geographic program. That is exactly what they were targeting.
Thank you.
Other questions for this panel? Okay. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you.
All right. Again, I want to thank the additional members of the legislature who came here today. I appreciate your time in this.
Thank you.
Colleagues, this may very well be our last hearing of the House Energy and Environment Committee for our for this session. This would be my last. We may have an informational session, but this might be my last one as the chair of this committee. So I just wanted to thank you all very much for, I think, one of the best committees in terms of asking questions, of really digging into the details, and really taking on some big challenges. So it's been a real pleasure to serve with all of you and to be the chair on this committee. And I can't end this without thanking Beth Petrino, who has served as such a wonderful committee administrator and really been a pleasure to work with and just a right hand for all of this work. So thank you, Beth. So I'm going to go ahead and close the informational meeting. I forgot to do that. If there's nothing else, Representative Nose.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say thank you, first of all, for allowing me to sit in on this. My community in Southeast Portland is really hurting right now. There are a lot of people who are rightfully upset and worried that they've had a prolonged exposure to cancer-causing agents. They feel very let down by government agencies and regulators who are trying to, I think, do the best they can with the tools and policies that are legal available to them, but maybe not up to it. The pollution was discovered through a Moss study. A story broke out in the Mercury, which is a local alternative newspaper, and here we are. I'm sincerely grateful that Bullseye and Ouroboros voluntarily ceased using cadmium, arsenic, and chromium when it was brought to their attention that they were the source. But obviously the regulations that we have in place to accommodate industry and pollution, they're going to need to be examined. I've had a lot of very smart people bend my ear about all this over the last couple of weeks. I'm coming up to speed. I think too often we think that cleaning up our environment is pitched as killing jobs and hurting our economy, but a business can't poison the community in which it manufactures its product and then expect that community to continue to support it. It might be less or more expensive for business to be required to do things to make our air cleaner in the short run, but the cost to society to do that in the long run, I think, will be less. I think we got a pretty good framework from which to start with from today. It may be that we need better standards at the federal level. It may be that we need better standards here in our own state if we're not able to get our Congress to do it. I know clearly that the DEQ agency needs to be better funded and not just funded with fees from the entities that it regulates. There's a cost to doing a better job, and having government adequately regulate for clean air, that cost is going to have to be borne by us in some way. And hopefully our political priorities will change. I think we've heard, prior to this whole situation breaking, there were a lot of attempts to try to do things to clean the air in Portland that haven't panned out. And I really appreciate you having this hearing and helping us take this first step here as this body to try to get this going. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for those words. And I think the other thing is, which hadn't been brought up, is that the federal delegation, our federal delegation, has done a really great job in getting the technical resources and some of the technical equipment we need to do more monitoring and really be able to proactively work quickly on finding out more about this issue. And so they've been working with the governor's office and with local governments on that as well. So we appreciate the support that they've done. So thank you for those words. And with that, if there's nothing else, I'm going to go ahead and close the hearing of the House Energy and Environment Committee. We're adjourned. Hearing of the House Energy and Environment Committee. We're adjourned. I'm going to go ahead and close.